Jonathan, hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.
Hello, welcome to Bagel Tech Photo, and most of the chat room are here for Bagel Tech Mac because we switched times. Sorry, fellas. Yeah, we swapped around. We've gone from 1 p.m. with the photo show and 3 p.m. with the Mac show. So you'll have to join us a little bit later on, I'm afraid, if you want to come back for Mac. I do apologise, but I did tweet out honest. We got the photo show coming up. Fantastic panel. Top left corner, our regular stalwart from the States, Chris Forsman. How's it going, mate?
Morning. It's going.
Dodgy connection and all.
It's raining here, so maybe, you know, we have this... I don't know if you guys are familiar with this company called Comcast.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. They should try insulating their cables.
Maybe. Maybe. Well, Comcast we don't say because usually people drop connection the minute they say the C word. So.
Mm-hmm.
The company that cannot be named.
Right.
There we go. Below him, we've got Mr. Alex Fox. How's it going, mate? Our resident arty guy from North London, West London, East London.
Yeah, all over London. Yeah, it's very good. Thank you very much. I do apologise for it not being a Mac show, but we will try and endeavour to be entertaining. And I will swear just to make you feel that we're still here.
Don't swear. Don't swear. Please don't swear because I've got video now and it's a pain in the backside trying to get rid of it.
Maybe I'll beep myself.
Kyle is with a client yet again. They've let him out of his cage that is his studio and he's off with a bow tie on doing some PR work and doing some voiceovers live. But he's going to be here for the Mac show at 3 o'clock for definite. So the time switch has helped him out, that's for sure. And Andy and Natko's joined us as well, so stick around. The Week in Photography. We lit the blue touch paper last week, fellas. A little discussion on touching. We've got comments galore. Perhaps one of the most telling is from Additive Theory on the Flickr page, and he said, liar, liar, pants on fire. Which I think kind of gives the level, really, of our tone of our conversation, doesn't it? We got rather heated.
Ewan?
Yeah?
That's me.
Was that you? Well, in that case, I think you're exactly right. Well done, mate. I put a picture up where I'd moved the football or the rugby ball in for a press image, and I thought, well, I'm a photojournalist, according to your definition, Chris, so I would have to be hung, drawn, and quartered as a result. It's a slippery slope was agreeing with you. A lot of people have said it's a slippery slope. Teresa wrote in and said that it's a slippery slope. That's where she agrees with Chris. And Carl said, personally, I've got no issue if the changes don't alter the context of the moment that's implied or that says something that the image, the moment didn't happen. I really hold a strict standard to photojournalism, though, when it covers important news and the true facts are very important. Teresa was talking about a second image, so she wanted two photographers to verify that the perspective was the same and that kind of thing. But there was one thing that was quite telling in what she said when she looked at it. She said, however, I've got to say, at this point in time, I don't believe anything I see in photojournalism anyway. So there's a quite a damning remark, I would have said, of the whole process. It is a great conversation. We've got a lot of emails on the subject, pros and cons, fours and against. Alex is right, Ewan's right, Chris is right. Decision was definitely split, but it was a good debate. We'll have a debate each month, I think, on something that's a bit more semantic because it did come across nicely. The Week in Photography is, there's some good news here in the UK. Security guards in the UK are being educated that photographers are not likely to be terrorists.
Who knew?
They've got one of the senior police officers has had a chat to their association and said that the larger your equipment is, the less likely you are to be a terrorist because camera surveillance would be covert. And based on the fact that most of the images of really typical buildings that you'd want to look at are on Google anyway, he's got a good point. And Germany did a test as well on photographers' rights. They sent some people out to look at sensitive buildings and see how many of them got stopped. And then they sent them out in long Arab garb. That we're talking about the stereotypical Dick Emery Arab garb here, you know, way, way over the top. And apparently the number of times they were stopped by the police more than doubled because they were wearing this costume.
It doesn't say much for the German police.
It doesn't, does it? No, I mean, if you've got someone that's out there in a clown's outfit, we'll stop you. But if you're out there in covert stuff with camouflage, and we'll leave you alone. It'll be fine.
Did they all claim their name was Borat?
Yeah, it was. It was very Borat, absolutely.
Cinque.
There's a comment about Burmese courts are going to send a photojournalist to court for 18 years for photographing the aftermath of a grenade attack, which we'll have to wait and see what happens with that one because it hasn't happened yet. But that that's pretty serious if they do that. Mm-hmm. And there was a comment about small sensors have their uses on petapixel.com, which I thought tied in nicely with one of the stories that you picked, Chris, about the iPhone 4 being put through a standard camera review test, which is quite interesting because none of us have actually done that with any of the photo phones, really, have we? We've all gone for, well, it looks nice, it's okay, but it's a phone. So if these things are pretending to be at that level, it's about time that they started going through the tests. So what was your view on it in what you read in the test that was done by Image Resource?
They put it through some standard tests. There were some they weren't able to do simply because of the way, obviously, like, it can't shoot RAW.
Because it's crap.
it's not. I mean, they said the sharpness was really good. They were especially impressed with the macro ability of the lens. So when you shoot really close up, it actually has a pretty flat field, and some of the softness that's typically in the corners goes away, which is really surprising. But I guess when you think about it, it's a little bit better to have softer corners with a much wider view than if you're really close up on something, because, you know, like if you're shooting like a document or something like that, it's important that the corners aren't soft.
Well, typically, you'd probably want to, in a lot of cases, maybe get to the stage where you'd maybe vignette the photo a little bit afterwards to try and just increase it, so the tough corners wouldn't make any difference. The thing that struck me in the pictures that were posted was that all of them had gone through Instagram. Nothing was a perfect single raw shot that was taken from the camera. And you noticed that as well, Alex.
Yeah, I mean, I read the article. I looked at the article and I looked at the evidence, and the whole thing began to be a bit of an iPhone 4 fan club thing. It was almost like they wanted to prove that it was slightly better than the
I got that
people like us have said. I was just thinking, I mean, iPhone 4, now, it's not beyond the brilliance of Apple or someone like that. I mean, would the iPhone 4, say, Apple don't really care about anyone that don't use Macs, so let's bring it back to Mac. So why don't they have an import facility from iPhone 4 where you get the optimum lens correction and vignette correction and everything as an automatic
software, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, so why not? You know, you're going to bring it into iPhoto. I mean, it's like having a RAW plugin. You know, because as soon as you plug in something with RAW, if it knows what the camera is, you can get it to do an auto correction. So why doesn't iPhoto or Preview or iTunes or all the others just not have an auto correction for iPhone 4 cameras?
That's a good point. I mean, they'd say most of the aberrations that there are on images are perfectly correctable within software. I mean, yeah, you do it yourself, certainly within Photoshop, it's very doable. So it seems like a sensible idea, and it's there, that it's fully within their control then. I mean, at the moment, the one thing that's really struck me, having been using iOS 5, is they still haven't corrected the metadata issue with the volume trigger. So when you take a picture with the volume, it screws the metadata, and actually you get the image inverse in some applications. But what's weird is that it's not consistent. So iPhoto will put it in correctly, but then Preview will show it upside down, and both of those are Apple software.
That's not new, because I've had issues occasionally with one of the Nikons I used to use that very occasionally it didn't know portrait to landscape, and you try and correct it and you'd get all these issues that it would try and argue with you.
Yeah, that's
because
what's happening
of this sacrosanctness about metadata. I mean, that's an interesting point, metadata, because of the whole concept of metadata originally, that it was a locked format, so it would act as if it was like a negative. So if you had played with something,
it was
everyone would know.
Yeah.
But it's not.
No.
And it hasn't been for an awful long time. So I'd have thought there was some legal obligation to make sure all these metadata issues were corrected, because, you know, admissibility in court has been proved because of metadata. Police have been using metadata as proof. And if this metadata is corrupting, then I think there, you know, could be a legal objection to them allowing it to go through.
Could be. Could be. It was an interesting thing to do, but I've got to say, and Alex, you said to me before we actually started recording, there was a few mentions, there was a few statements in there that when you read them, you were kind of like, well, I'm sorry, but that just doesn't ring true. That's a little bit of an exaggeration at the least.
Yeah, I mean, the ISO claims, et cetera. I mean, next they're going to claim it's got good low light performance.
Well, it does. It says that.
Well, I suppose if it's pitch black and you get a pitch black picture, that's quite good low light performance. But if you actually want to get anything out of it, you've got trouble. Unless you like dots.
I mean, it does okay in low light, but it's nowhere near a compact, nowhere near. But.
Well, and they go into detail about the fact that if you shoot, well, and I shouldn't say if you shoot at high ISO, but if you shoot in low light, the automatic high ISO will kick in. And they said that basically you're looking at 4x6 prints from the images at best, which I agree with. I mean, I would say 999 times out of 1,000, every picture I take with an iPhone is going somewhere online or in an email.
Exactly.
Or,
yeah, it's not going to print anyway.
It's not even going to get printed. But I was surprised that they said if you take something in bright light, that you can even get up to 13x19 inch prints out of it, which I think is pretty impressive. I mean, I was impressed by that fact that they were able to get decent shots at that size.
Yeah, it depends how decent you want the print, though. You know, I've printed a couple of things off of an iPhone 4, and maybe it's because I'm a professional and I'm used to professional prints, but I've never printed anything off of an iPhone 4 that I would consider more than very amateur quality print. Never. No. Even in great light. It's okay on the screen, but any more on that, you're wasting your time.
It's wallet fodder, nothing more.
Yeah. But isn't that what it's part of? As long as it's an iPhone 4 camera rather than trying to be a camera in its own right, then you can't really argue, because we all see cameras on phones as an added benefit. We don't see them as actually part of why we bought the phone. We bought a phone and it has a camera. The day they start trying to sell them as actual cameras, then they've got to up the game a lot.
Right.
Yes, that's exactly right. Exactly right. Pentax, our old friends, have bought out an 18x optical zoom with the Optio RZ18. It's a point and shoot, and I got to say, when I saw the pictures, it looks nice.
Yeah, I mean, just to annoy Kyle, I love Pentax.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I don't know. We have a love-hate relationship with Pentax. Chris loves them and Kyle doesn't. But yeah, I mean, they're making some really nice cameras. And funnily enough, this is the first thing they've really brought out since they've done the big takeover, or have been taken over. I mean, it was obviously in the pipeline, but this sort of idea, you know, they're not trying to push the boundaries of how many pixels you can get in a camera now. They're actually trying to push the boundaries of usability. And this is, you know, this is a fairly basic camera, but, you know, you look at the equivalent of 25-450. As a point and shoot super zoom compact camera, you really don't need anything more than exactly what they're giving you. Yeah, so I think this is a lovely little camera.
Yeah.
And it's a good price as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's they're talking about it being 25 to 450 equivalent zoom, and they're talking about $299. So that's not too bad. Mm-hmm. Chris, what's your view?
It's a pretty compact camera too. I mean, for such a long zoom, so that I think it's a pretty good package for someone who just wants a decent pocket camera. You know, it's got all the zoom you'll ever need. I think 16 megapixels again, you know, I'm not that crazy on it, but you could set it to way lower than that and it'll do pixel binning. So, you know, I'd definitely give it a shot. I'd like to see
some test shots, definitely, because it's got my, yeah. I think this is the key part, isn't it? Whenever you get these press releases, you look at them and it's whether they get you salivating, whether they want you to find out any more about the camera. And when I saw this, it looks nice. It's slim. It's got a good spec. It's not stupid. It's only shooting 720p video. So it's not trying to do the 1080 thing with virtually no capacity for it and hardly any processing. And it's shooting a decent sized image. And there's, you know, the super zooms, I think the only thing that bothers me about these is two things. Firstly, the ability to actually hold them still is going to be a big issue at 450mm. And the second thing that bothers me, and this is where I'm a bit out of my depth a bit more, but when you manufacture the glass for these things, you're talking about an awful lot of curvature and depth in the cells that are being produced, and that's going to increase your production costs, I would have thought, but also you get a lot more criticality then in your quality of glass, surely.
Yeah, I mean, again, there is a certain extent that if something is done optically, it shouldn't be that relevant as long as it's done properly. Mm. You know, you can bend light more. Oh, I'm going to get really shot in the head. Someone's going to have a PhD in light bending and they're going to argue with me here. But you can bend light.
Come on, Obi-Wan.
Exactly. I won't say the word infinitely, but you can bend light to a great deal as long as you do it, if you like, using an analog glass, then you can bend it to ways and means that are always correctable. And you know, to a certain extent, unless you get down to the absolute photons in there, you shouldn't have a problem. But the problem does come with the faults that you will get inherent in a piece of glass. You know, that's where exactly you get the issue.
The thicker you cast this glass, the thicker you mould the glass, the more opportunity for error you're going to have within
exactly.
the quality.
If it's done right, as in, say, it's 99% smooth, or, you know, the angles are exactly right, if it's 99%, then you won't have any problem. But you are pushing it to a point where to get that 99% correct, you're less likely to get 99% at those corrective angles. But, you know, I understand what they're doing. And, you know, let's face it, in the last, you know, few years, mainly because of NASA and the things they've done with optical telescopes in space and things like that, the way that lenses are made and the way that they're ground, et cetera, has made, you know, our common or garden lenses a lot more usable, and you know, the tolerances are a lot greater than they used to be. So, you know, it can be done, but, you know, the thing is, they're charging $299 for this thing. You wonder how much expertise and high-end technology they can put into something that they're only charging $299 for.
Thumbs up tentatively, would we say?
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, we'll give this a go. Pentax gets a thumbs up from Bageltech Photo.
There's
a
yes. There you go. Just as a point, it's to do with, you know, you were talking, Chris was talking about the 16 megapixels and various things and on these small cameras. I was watching something, I think it was part of Click from the German tech show last week or something. It's part of the BBC network. And they had experts in the field on photography talking about how, is it basically, they were paraphrasing word for word what we've been saying for a very long time about the fact that not only do we not have the need for sensors to go to past a certain point, but the fact that the actual physicality of cramming smaller and smaller spaces, pixels onto these smaller and smaller sensors actually is degrading the quality of the light that's going through them. So, you know, the BBC have found experts that maybe listen to Bageltech and they know what they're talking about. So, you know, we was right is what I'm trying to say. We was right, and we have been paraphrased, or basically there's lots of people that agree with us. So sensors don't need to be so big, and the fact that they are shrinking the sensors down and putting more and more pixels on them are actually getting to the point now of hindering the quality of the sensor.
Mm. That's the sweet part.
I think what Alex is saying is, we told you so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm basically trying to say, actually.
Nah.
Exactly. But, you know, I just thought, I was sitting here watching it with a friend who actually sometimes listens to Bageltech on its various shows, and he said, I'm sure he's using the exact same words that you guys used on the show, and I wouldn't dream of saying that, but obviously the content was very similar.
Well, apparently we had a conversation on RAW versus JPEG, and then the following week, This Week in Photography, had the same conversation, so...
You know, it's nice to be market leaders. Call us the Mac of the photo show.
We are. We're there. Canon have vomited, it would seem, overnight, and spewed up an entire range of cameras. We've got the bridge camera, which is the SX40HS, and we've also got a few compacts that have popped up. We've got the, I'm trying to find the numbers, the S100, and also Ricoh had one as well. So what's the first thoughts on the SX40 that's come out?
Well, I think you're going to like the lens on this.
Because it doesn't come off.
It goes to 8. Yeah, it doesn't come off. Except with a hacksaw, it'll come off.
Love you, Chris.
It will come off. But 24 to 840, how's that for a zoom range?
No, that's not bad. I mean, well, it's not bad in terms of the versatility. It's bad in terms of the fact whether you're actually going to manage to hold it still.
Well, it does come.
So Canon does claim it has intelligent image stabilization.
It should be an 18. I don't want a 24. I want an 18.
Hang on a second, Alex. 840 mil. It needs world stabilization, not lens stabilization or image stabilization.
I mean, that's three tripods.
That's gonna be. You're talking about 12 degrees of movement for every breath that you take or every pump of your heart. I mean,
a special thing. It like accommodates the rotation of the Earth. I don't know. It's got
gimbals in it.
It's like the things, you know, when you plan your flight, when they use the computers to do it, they have to take into the curvature of the Earth to make sure they get the right fuel consumption.
It's exactly it. That is.
Mm-hmm. No, I was going to say, in all seriousness, which is difficult, 24, it was 24, wasn't it? Yeah. I don't know why. I would rather it went down to something like 18 and knock a little bit off the other end. Because if you want something that, you know, as much as Ewan would like to change the lens, if you can't get the lens off this thing, it makes sense to be able to have it super wide at one end.
Mm.
And, you know, even if it's almost like a macro facility to give you the super wideness at one end, it makes sense to me because of, say you want to do a room shot or something, then it will be useful for absolutely everything. I mean, bearing in mind that in the old days, you had to be careful with the way you made lenses because there was nothing to correct them. Well, like I say, the lens correction is £1 a penny now, you know, so you could easily just lens correct any picture you want. So why not go down to 18 or even 14? You know, right down as low as you can and then knock a bit off the zoom end.
Now, I'm just imagining someone using this 840 millimeter zoom from the stands at, say, a football or baseball game or a concert or any kind of thing. I mean, the one thing that I learned working at a camera shop, and I worked like almost a decade, is people never get enough on the long end. They can never get enough.
They always want the long.
Girlfriend tells you.
That's true.
Yeah.
No, I've got to say with Chris there, it's you sit and go on about what the 12 to 24 will do for you in the Sigma range, but actually when it comes down to it, people start getting wood over 400 to 800 lenses and the 5 grand lenses and the 10 grand lenses where you're shooting all the way through from 500 to 800 at f2.8. You know, that's real jerk off material, isn't it? He's right. He's absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but in the same way, it's people are finally realizing that you don't need the 2 trillion megapixel camera. Yeah. Maybe we could teach people the usage of a slightly wider lens at the lower end.
I mean, if you let's say you bought this and you wanted to use it as a spotting scope almost, just to go and look at something when you're at the football or things like that, and you realized you were never going to take a stable image with it, particularly handheld, then okay. But people are buying these things thinking that they're going to extend it all the way out and take a stable image without being lent against something at the very minimum, let alone probably tripoded. They're being missold, most definitely. But as Chris said, it's the numbers that sell, isn't it? You know, the number of pixels sell.
Mm-hmm.
The millimeters sell.
I do have to applaud Canon here. This is a 12 megapixel camera, not 16. And they use a larger sensor than what's in that Pentax camera. So, you know, your low light sensitivity or your overall image quality is definitely going to be better than something that fits in your pocket.
I mean, I think I would say that they are cutting back slightly on the sensors, on the silly numbers on the sensors now, is because of, you know, the game's up. People realize that the quality is actually quite important, and they're not going to invest anything in R&D to make the quality of an 18 megapixel tiny sensor any better. So what they're saying is, okay, well, we'll give you a 12 megapixel, slightly bigger sensor, and then the image quality would be better. I don't think they're backing down because of they think that, you know, they're doing anyone any favors. I think they're backing down because they realize they can't get away with it anymore because what they've been putting out has been quite frankly rubbish.
I think rather than going for long zoom lenses and having the challenges of dealing with the optics and the expense of dealing with the optics, the camera producer would be far better to work on the sensors and bring out a sensor whereby you could crop X percentage and still retain quality. Crop and zoom.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bit like they've done with, say, the Intel chips, isn't it? And instead of going, like, when did they stop? They stopped about a 3 gig processor, a single core processor. So instead of going up to 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, they added cores into it. So what they did, they stabilized it at a point, and then they said, okay, well, we'll give you 3 or 4 of those. So it's sort of the equivalent of the way that the sensors are going. Yeah, they're stabilizing it at the point where they can get the best amount of light through at the best quality for a size, and then they're building up all the everything else around it, which is sort of what they did with the processors. So perhaps that's the future. You're going to have a really, really solid performance 12 to 16 megapixel sensor, and maybe they'll do, is it the Favion or whatever it is, the Sigma version, maybe they'll triple up the shots or something, so there you get the extra pixels on, you know, tripled up shots or something. So therefore processor wise that's not particularly difficult with the power of a dual core processor. So I mean, that's the way I'd like them to go. Really, really stable 12 megapixels, and maybe give you an RGB ops to shoot 3 different overlays. That will give you 36 megapixels.
Yeah.
I mean, Hasselblad are doing it, aren't they, on their 3D or 4D or whatever they call it, H4D or something. They've taken a 50 megapixel camera and they're calling it a 200 megapixel camera because it's actually overlaying 4 separate shots.
Mm-hmm.
And you can print a
real story on that, yeah.
An amazing bit of kit. But it's, you know, if you like, it's Sigma that came up with that, because Sigma have been doing that for, 4 or 5 years now, maybe even longer. So maybe we should credit Sigma for the new technology moving forward in cameras.
Sigma do a lot of good stuff, yeah.
Well, we should credit Foveon. They'd come up with the sensor.
Okay, all right. How about Sigma for having the balls to take it on where everyone else was going big money? Because it wasn't long ago they were selling a 4-megapixel camera, but it was giving you a 12-megapixel output because of the sensor type.
Mm-hmm.
So, more grease to their elbow and all that. Grease, whatever it's called.
A decent week for photography news comes to a close. Well done. Shall we do some questions?
Yes, please.
We've got some nice questions from you guys this week. First one, hi Ewan and the gang. Been listening to all the shows for some time now and love the banter you all have. I've reviewed you and downloaded you as much as I possibly can. I listen to the photo show more for entertainment than anything else, but I'd like to move from my Fuji Fine Pics up to a higher mark. I've a low budget of around £400, but fancy a bottom end SLR, and I've been looking at the Nikon D3100, and that's now hit that price point. Having had a 35mm SLR in the past, or do you? Bloody hell! Who wrote these questions? Price
Sorry,
point.
Carl?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, mate. Having had a 35mm SLR in the past. Or do you think a good compact is better at that kind of budget? Keep up the good work and good luck with the awards. Simon in Wigan. He's got £400, burn a hole in his pocket. He's looked at the D3100, or would we push him towards a compact at that price?
No, I think we would all push him to the DSLR if the budget affords it, right?
Seconded.
I mean,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. If you're considering it and you've got the budget, then that's the way I would go.
I mean, that's a 12 megapixel camera, 10 megapixel camera. It's a decent
I think it's 12.
I think 12.
Decent sensor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I mean, you're getting the feed down from the top level of Nikon cameras on that. I mean, it's a fairly new model as well.
Just have a quick look on Warehouse Express, but I think at £400, it actually comes with the lens kit. So that's 18 to 55 mil lens kit. So
yeah.
You're getting lens and body for that.
But remembering with this DSLR, obviously you can add what you want, you can filter what you want, you can do all the fancy trickery you want.
Draw.
Yeah, and, you know, change the lenses, buy a new lens, you know, borrow a lens. Secondhand lenses will fit this because Nikon haven't changed their mount for a very, very, very long time. You know, and also remembering if you start off with this this body and you buy a nice lens here and a nice filter there, etc., when you do buy a new body eventually in 5 years' time, they're all going to be compatible.
Right.
So you're not, if you buy, you spend £400 on a compact, that's it. That's all you're ever going to get.
But, it's you know, future eBay.
Yeah, and you'll be amazed what is out there. Remembering, there's an awful lot of... I shouldn't give away the secret because I'm going to run out of lenses. But there's so many, you know, charity shops and places like that or car boot sales that they've got old 35mm SLRs on there for £2-3 with some lenses. Now, let's face it, we don't particularly want the SLRs, but the lenses are completely compatible, and you'll be surprised how few people know that. Mm. So they'll send you a camera with a £500 lens on it because of its digital. Sorry, it's a film camera. Well, put the camera in your collection and so you can look at it and it looks nice on the shelf. And you've got a beautiful lens for next to nothing. I've got loads of them.
Yeah, no, I'd have said yes with that, definitely. I mean, I've got to say at the moment anyway, I'm still tempted to switch, but back manager.
Well, at that price, you can have both.
Based on the fact I hardly did a day's work in August, I'd be kind of really stupid, really, wouldn't it? I've done a bit more this week, so it's not the end of the world. I think the other thing as well is that if you look at the bodies that you buy, if you buy into the SLR range, you're more likely to keep the past bodies, not always trade in. I've certainly got all of the past camera bodies that I've ever owned. I've never got rid of them.
I've got every camera I ever bought.
It's kind of like the Mac thing, you know. You keep your old Macs, you keep your old... I've got, my 300D is still in the cupboard, and it's a sparkling sensor. Well worth pulling out for a family shoot or something.
It's just nice to own and play with, and I just sometimes take them out of the bags and have a nostalgic look at my old cameras. It's lovely. I've said too much. I'm sorry.
Is that your private time, Alex?
Exactly. Some people have collections.
An old Nikon and a box of tissues. Moving on quickly. Question two. Hey, fellas. I was thinking of booking a model for a shoot, but while I've got some studio equipment, I'm a little nervous and have no idea where I should look to find a model who's going to help me rather than get upset at my lack of experience.
So you were booking a model?
Do you? It does sound more like he wants a hooker than a model. Do you have any tips, advice, or a website which would be a good starting place for me to book someone? Thanks, Brian in Wall's End.
Well, my first advice would be to get a good-looking friend first. Practice on before you hire a professional.
I would say get an ugly friend because then you can't make them look any worse.
To be fair, mate, he lives north of Newcastle, so that's pretty much a non-starter.
All right, that's at least 2.5 million people we've just lost. You know what I would say, in all honesty? I would probably go to the local adult education centre and take up a little course in... a photography course, because of you'll get access to models, you'll get access to equipment, and obviously you'll hopefully learn something new. And that's a good way of tentatively getting into the marketplace. Plus you'll meet models and you'll be able to get, if you like the girl or, you like the agency that supplied her, you can get information that way. Or maybe even phone up the local adult education photography course and ask them where they get their models from. Because these models are obviously used to working with people that are starting out and learning their trade. Okay. But I would actually join, I would join a photo group. And, we can all do it. I mean, I'm sure if I went to some adult educational centre and do a photo group, there'll be something there new that I'd never heard of before. Mm. And there'll be, I would go that way. I wouldn't jump in head first and try and just book a model. I would, and at the very least, just phone up one of these places that, do adult education photo courses and ask them where they book their models, because they'll be used to working with people that are in the situation that you're in.
I was going to say Camera Club is your best place to start, because there's usually no pressure there and you've got people that help you with the lighting when you get going as well. Mm-hmm. The thing when Storm in the chat room has said, what, meat models, in inverted commas. And there is, I mean, if you go to some of the websites, people say net models are a real meat market. You get some old fat bird who's got her boyfriend or husband to take a picture of her in the mirror and put it up, or she's taking on her own camera phone and puts it up and wants 50 quid an hour. there's a lot of bad stuff out there. There's some really, really good sites as well as, but your best bet is start local, as Chris says and Alex says there. Start with a camera club, start with an adult education course, or just take some pictures of friends.
Definitely yeah, the right I mean, answers. When I was younger, I mean, I was taking photography at university, and I guess I was just lucky, but I had a fair number of really hot friends, and I could just call them up and, hey, are you busy? Want to come over or take some pictures? And they're like, yeah, sure. So, you know, it makes it easier because you already know the person. They already know you. So it's much more relaxed.
Sounds like a Monty Python sketch, that does.
No, I mean,
nudge, wink, wink.
I'm at the stage where people come to me to shoot their model portfolio. So I don't usually pay that much for models anyway. But if you get someone that you want to book, the one thing that I always insist that they do is send me a picture that's taken on their phone that's got the EXIF data in that I can check the date on, because I've had no end of times where I've booked people on what's on their profile on a website and they turn up on the day and you're kind of like, you're 10 years older, aren't you?
I tell you what's more interesting. I mean, this is an honest opinion. There's nothing to me more interesting, and I don't want to sound like Will Green, but to shooting a lot older people, because, you know, an older, more mature, shall we say, an old gentleman with a wrinkled face makes a far, far more interesting picture than some young, nubile, shiny, over-made up young girl.
I think we both agree there's merits in both there, though, Alex.
Yeah, well, it depends on what your object is. But if you actually want to learn...
There's websites where you can shoot both of them together.
Yes, I'm sure there is. I think they're blocked on my system, so my kids can't see those sort of thing.
Moving on swiftly to question 3. Hello, gents. I've got a problem with colour balance and wondered what you'd advise. I've noticed that my Canon 600D is shooting an image which looks green when I open it. I've listened to the podcast since the first episode, and on your advice, I went through and bought a calibrator and calibrated my monitor, and this didn't change the effect. I've been using the auto correction in Photoshop, and if anything, it makes the effect worse at times. Ooh. I can correct it to look good according to my own eye, but if the calibrator and the auto tone is saying it's right, should I really be questioning it? That's a really good question. Thanks for the advice. Cheers, Fred. Southampton.
Who wants to go first?
Well, Canon does have a reputation for shooting green. I've got 3 Canon cameras, and nearly all the time the image that comes out can be a little bit on the green side, especially if you're shooting in Adobe as the colour map. If you're going in SGB, it's different, but Adobe tends to come out a touch green. And also as well, if you're shooting where there's green, then that has a huge effect on the image as well as, so that could be part of it, I don't know. But Chris, what do you think?
Without seeing the pictures and knowing the conditions it was shot in, you know, I mean, you know, we're really kind of venturing some guesses, but I'm wondering if maybe the white balance is set to like one of the fluorescent settings or something like that, or if he's shooting under fluorescent lighting, that's like a tricky balance. I mean, that's the first thing that comes to my mind.
Alex?
What? I mean, colour calibration is what I sort of specialise in because of, you know, the photography I take. The whole point of what I do, it's got to be, the colour's got to be right, otherwise no one will pay me. Hence, I'm sitting here very quietly with not a lot to do. I would say, though, if the auto correction in Photoshop is making it slightly worse, I'd actually question whether your camera has a slight error or a fault, because of auto correction, in all my experience, if anything, for Nikon, it always whacks up the reds, but what it does, it tries to find anything in the picture that it assumes is white, and it makes that white, and it makes it far too white in general. So auto correction, if auto correction is making your greens even greener, I would say there might be something wrong with your sensor, because if it's reading the data and it's believing that green is white, and it's taken that as the base level. I think it sounds like part of the data that's coming out of that camera is corrupted. So in other words, it's giving it a reading of the white balance being, say a figure 5,000 Kelvin, and it's outputting that figure, and the camera believes that it is reading it at 5,000 Kelvin. So when auto-correction is taking that data, it's taking that data, but that data is wrong. And if you can correct it by eye, that means that I would have said it's an electronic and it's an output, an EXIF data problem or a sensor problem, because auto correction will always take something and make it as white can be. So I would suggest that it is a problem with the white balance, but the white balance, it's probably the right white balance is doing it correctly, but the actual output, the actual data that's coming out, the figure on that camera. I mean, if you open it up in
Photoshop, it's corrupted data to start with.
Exactly, and the data is corrupted, and that's why it's believing that your white is actually green, and it's working from that wrong point to start off with. I mean, that's my terrible
analysis. You know, like I said, if we could see some of these pictures, if we knew shot indoors or outdoors or what kind of lighting, and we could look at the picture, maybe even look at some of the metadata and look at that, you know, it might be easier to really nail down what the cause is. But
I mean, if you've got pictures and you've got problems, then post them on the Flickr group and we can look at them all together, and you'll be able to get an answer to your question, Fred. The only thing I would say is that auto tone is doing color and levels at the same time. So if you do Command Shift L, it'll be trying to do color and level. If you open Command L, drawing your black and white markers to meet the histogram, and then you should have a white and a black on there somewhere. Get your information tool and go and find it. And if where it looks like it's a white, you look in and there's high amounts of green within that white, then Alex may be right in what he's saying about the fault there. But you should have a white in that point. And if you have got that, then do your color correction separately and it may make a difference. But it doesn't sound right.
Can I just add one very quick point that I just think will be a good way of analyzing this? Set your camera to a white balance. Just pick a figure, 5,000. Can you do a Kelvin on a Canon 600?
Yeah, you can pick it.
Okay, so set it to 5,000. It doesn't matter what you do, but just set it to that. Then just shoot a piece of white card. Okay, just pure white card. Put it into Photoshop. Then go into something like RAW, open it up and see what measurement you get off of it. You pick the pipette in the top when you go into white balance. Click it and it will give you a reading and you'll be able to see if it's come up as 5,000 or not. And then you'll know if that's green when you put it up, you know you've got a sensor problem.
Cool. Good advice. There we go. Test cards. You can get test cards in the back of a lot of magazines and stuff. So,
Get something out of the printer.
Brilliant. Last word goes to our sponsors, UK2.net. They are the people that really look after us. We are utterly and totally lost without them. If we didn't have their support, we would fold. And now we're doing video and they're picking up all that, as well as we've kind of trebled our bandwidth usage. And based on the fact they give us unlimited bandwidth free of charge, we're absolutely grateful as hell. If you want to buy any services that they provide, please use UK2 and go through our website. You'll find the logo on there that says BagelTech is powered by UK2. Click on that. It tracks you through to their site. Be very, very careful to make sure that you use the two offer codes that we've got, though. BagelTech will get you 15% off whatever you've bought in your cart. And if you're transferring in a domain, there's a DNS management charge that you'll pick up at about £20. You don't have to pay that if you're a BagelTech listener. You need to type in BagelDNS as your offer code, and that will get rid of that charge. I've had a few emails this week, one of them from Andy Stevenson, a Dr. Appy Mac, who said, how come there's a charge for DNS management? And he's the one that sat there while I'm reading the bloody adverts out and hasn't listened. You've got to type in BagelDNS to get rid of the DNS management charge. You can use both codes. It's fine. And the other thing is, we've got a competition running. Huzzah! If you go below that logo, you'll see win a Nintendo 3DS, 1 year's hosting, or a £25 iTunes voucher. First, second and third, click on that link, go to a page that asks you a very simple question about one of their servers. It's dead easy to find it. You'll find the answer on their homepage. Type in the answer and you could win a Nintendo 3DS. I mean, the chances are if you're listening to this network, you've probably got a service with them and they've got your email address anyway, so it's not like it's a wild advertising spree where they're getting a huge amount of random spam emails to be developed. Please support UK2. Please enter the competition. Please use the links, even if you just want to sign into your account. Because right now, with the video podcast that we've got, if we lost their service, I couldn't afford it. I'm knackered. I'm absolutely broke.
Have to go to work.
I'm lost. But you have to get to work as it is, mate. Where can we get a hold of you, Chris?
You can read all my blathering on technology on ArsTechnica.com, where I'm a regular contributor. And you can also find me on Twitter at Foresmac, Foresmac.
Well done, mate. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And Alex, where can we get you?
You can get me at AlexGFox on Twitter or Alex@twitterything.com. And welcome back, Carl. All is forgiven. And I think Ewan has proved your point.
Are you saying I was crap?
I would never say that. I just, I can correct it to good what, according left eye, what, sorry?
2 weeks, one email cock up. That's a bit harsh.
Yeah, but you know, what's it?
Blue glass swagger can't get one out without cocking it up.
Is that the point? Glass houses and stones?
Oh, it's not going to stop me taking the piss.
That's true. No.
You can buy photo shirts as well. Go to spreadshirt.co.uk and buy yourself a shirt with a photo logo on and slogans and stuff like that. If you want one made up that's your own and a custom one, send me what you want on the shirt. I'll get it made up and add it into the catalogue and you can buy it. We're going to be back again next week at 1 o'clock. Thank you for the overfill chat room who's here for Mac, but you're going to have to stick around because that's coming up in 2 hours time or an hour's time at 3 o'clock. So Bagel Tech Photo will be live at 1 o'clock every Friday from this point going forwards. Have a great weekend. And make sure you take some pictures and stick them on the Flickr group, eh? Bye.
Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.